Welcome to the Leading Saints Studio. I'm Kurt Frankum, and excited to have an enlightening conversation with Rick here, who I'm used to listening to the podcast. Now I'm in it. This will be surreal.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our next conversation with Kurt Frankum, we'll talk about a conversation he had with David Osler. We'll talk about some of the research David has done on why people lose their faith. Is church history part of that? Check out our conversation. Another episode that I really enjoyed of yours was, and there's too many Oslers out there. There's a Blair Osler and a Blake Osler and a...
Rick Osler and a David Osler.
David Osler. Which one was the guy you interviewed?
David Osler.
David Osler.
Yeah.
Fantastic interview, not only because... I thought the topic was interesting, but he actually used statistics, and I'm a statistics teacher, and so that was kind of cool too as well. So, can you tell us a little bit about your interview with Dave Osler and what it was about?
Yeah, so Dave Osler came to me, and he's a stats guy as well, and so he knew that I had an audience of leadership leaders in the church, and so he wanted to send out a survey, you know, not a scientific survey by any means, but send out a survey and just ask some questions and get their perspective of things as far as why individuals doubt in the church and what leads to doubt. And then he took the similar survey and did it to a community of active Latter-day Saints who also are who they consider themselves in a faith crisis or who are doubting, and ask them similar questions. And then it was just interesting to line them up and see the discrepancy between what leaders thought was the reason people left or started doubt and what those doubting was their reason, right? Where, you know, leaders make the assumption that that individuals have been offended and therefore they're doubting and therefore they remove themselves from the church, or that they want to sin, or whatever it is. And on the when they interviewed the group of doubters, it was, no, actually, I have concerns with certain social issues. Historical facts have played a role in that, and also just general trust in the leadership of the church or the church as an organization. And so our hope was doing that that interview and that research is we want to help leaders understand what the real concerns are. So, because oftentimes, as a bishop who's very orthodox, someone who's maybe has some progressive beliefs or some doubts comes in their office, it becomes this tug-of-war match, where if the bishop doesn't understand where they're coming from, he can never really help them and help them find a place or help them feel like they're in a safe place or that they're being heard. And so what came out of that was some really fascinating perspectives that leaders can better empathize with, rather than, again, it's so easy for a leader to get in the fix-it mode. Like, okay, you're here, you have this doubt, let me read some scriptures to you, and then by the time you leave, you'll be on a better track, right? But we have to separate ourselves from that and just be able to empathize and connect with that individual. So is that a good summary of what we did?
Yeah, and I mean, I just loved the statistics. Can you talk about some of his findings in there?
Yeah, let me pull them up so I can speak to him. So first off, one thing we talked about is the term faith crisis, like you're in a faith crisis. That isn't... it's not a helpful term, but the problem is as David makes the point that any time you give a group of individuals a certain label, it's never really helpful because no two people fit in the same box. But so we talk about, you know, I typically try and use the term faith transition, and I hope that all of our faith is transitioning in some way. Like if we have a static faith, I don't think we're gaining much from this mortal experience.
See, now let me throw that out there, because when I hear the term faith transition, and maybe this is just because I've been on the blogger-nackle too long, that means you're transitioning out of the church.
Right.
So I would view that as a negative term as well.
Yeah, and some people see that, but to me, I mean, but if you use the term faith crisis, that that's a negative connotation, that you're in
a
crisis,
it is,
right?
But yeah.
And that's the thing, like, what term do we use? I'm happy to use another term, but I'm more uncomfortable with faith crisis than faith transition, because we're all transitioning in some way in life, at least I hope so. I mean, that's why we came to this earth, is to transition to be more like our Father in heaven, right? So, and I get it, it's some people transition out of the church, and the vernacular online is what it is, but there's just not a... And you know, doubting member, I don't know. Anyways, that's it's worth a worth thinking about. And
yeah, we'll have to come up with a better term, but anyway.
So the questions. So he asked a percentage of that strongly agree about the contribution of the issues to an individual's faith crisis. So they asked the leaders how much is being offended part of the how much does that contribute to an individual's faith? And they and 40 almost 50% of them says that has a that contributes to it. Where the faith crisis member, it was less than 5%, right, said that. Conflict with other members or leaders, we talked about this idea of conflict. And this is a good reason that shows why leaders may be so afraid of this idea of conflict is because they 40% of them said, yeah, conflict contributes to a member's an individual's faith crisis. But it was maybe 10% of the faith crisis member that said that contributed. So to me, that's more reason that we need to be more open to conflict because it's going to only deepen faith. It's not going to run people out of the classroom. I mean, there will be some that will be uncomfortable with it, but it's their turn to be uncomfortable. So next one they ask is, how about not wanting to live the commandments? How much did that contribute to the faith crisis? And it was about 35% of leaders said, yes, that contributes to it. And I can barely see, maybe 1% of those in the faith crisis said that. So knowing this and seeing this, it just helps a leader step back and see, okay, we're not on the same page, so how can we even have the conversation? How can I even begin to help an individual who's wrestling with doubt when I don't even understand why they're wrestling with doubt, right? Another question is that he asked the percentage who strongly agree about the contribution of issues in individuals' faith crisis in regards to questions about church history, and then it went the other way, right? A lot of faith crisis members, that was a biggie, almost more than 85%. Gender roles within the church, that was another biggie for
faith crisis. So said, how about the leaders? Did the leaders think it was a problem?
The leaders were around 40%, but it wasn't the 80%, right? There's still a discrepancy.
40 and 80, it's a big 40 difference. 80,
yeah. Church's LGBT policy, same thing. I mean, they almost look identical. Transparency with decision-making, like same thing, right? And so with this information, I feel like a leader can better approach some of these situations when they have the right statistics, right? The right data. So does that make sense?
Yeah. So the big issues are, so the real issues, I guess we should say, are our church history was 85%, you said?
Uh-huh.
LGBT was... probably second?
Yeah, they're all... That was just under 80%.
Under 80%. Uh-huh. So church history, LGBT...
Gender roles was the other one, which was about
70%. 70%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and to me, that doesn't mean... In my opinion, no doctrine, absolutely zero doctrine has to change or should be... It's not about getting doctrine to change. It's about the culture. If we can change the culture and start talking, having a dialogue about these things, then I think that's where we'll see those pews start to fill up with those that maybe have separated themselves from
the church. Well, it's going to require a bishop that's comfortable with conflict, right? Mm-hmm. And I think most bishops are like, I'm busy enough. I don't need you complaining about somebody else's lesson. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got other... I need to call a primary teacher. Mm-hmm. I need to... I'm too busy. Mm-hmm. At least that's my perception. Is that a valid perception as a former bishop or stake president member?
Yeah, I mean, here's the reality, is Sterling W. Seal, who was a 70 assistant to the 12 back in the 70s and 80s, he said there's only one problem in the world, and the problem is leadership. If we can get leadership right, all other problems will be fixed, right? And you're right, bishops are busy, stake presidents are busy, they're busy, right? But part of that is that as far as their approach to leadership, if they don't sit back and really are intentional about their approach, then yeah, they're just going to be busy running around. Like, don't come to that problem. I don't have time for that problem. Nobody wants to be that leader. And so every leader has to reevaluate how they're approaching things. And if people aren't being heard or validated, like, that's a problem. That's a big problem. And it doesn't matter how well the chili cook-off goes that next weekend or how well the Christmas party goes. Like, if people don't feel validated or don't feel purpose in their meetings, like, being busy is not an excuse.
Well, can I tell you a story from a bishop that told me this story? So they were sitting there, and this drives me crazy, but they were sitting there. It was Fast Sunday. Mm-hmm. There was a baby blessing, and apparently there's a guideline in the handbook that only says a certain number of brothers are supposed to be in the circle. Are you aware of that?
I don't think it's very specific. It just says, like to avoid large circles. You know? It's not a specific number. I'd always ask, as a bishop, my interpretation, I'd say, strive to have no more than eight brethren in that circle, right? But it's hard when, you know, your Uncle Gus came, and what are you going to say? No, the bishop says, you know, it is what it is.
So this is a true story. Bishop came, and he told me this. He says he's sitting there, and there's like 15 people come up in the circle, and the state presidency was there, and it was a counselor, and he turned to the bishop, and he says, you need to do something about that. And the bishop turned to him, and he said, what would you like me to do?
Yeah, that's a good response.
It was a great response. And but I do feel like there's some real, and I know that this state presidency member was a real, you need to follow the bishop's handbook. Every answer is in the bishop's handbook. But it feels to me like if this bishop, who I think gave a great answer, had followed the handbook, he's going to create hurt feelings. He's going to create contention in the ward that you don't want to do. And so I think he handled that the best way he could. But I also know that he was pressured to handle that in what I would call an unchristlike manner. Do you have any response to that?
Yeah. So there are, generally speaking, there are two hats that a bishop wears. One is a judge in Israel, where he has to make decisions, you know, maybe in the context of a temple recommend interview, whether that interview should be signed and handed over to that individual. And then there's the hat that bishops wear that are the empathizing hat of, this individual isn't coming to me because I'm a judge in Israel. This person is coming to me because they need a Christ-like figure who's going to say, wow, tell me more about that. What's that like, right? But we get that mixed up so easily that, oh, I'm a judge in Israel. Like you know, you're not supposed to do that. Or a typical one that a friend of mine who experienced the same sex attraction came to a friend of his in the state presidency and said and expressed this to him. And I totally can understand the response that this leader had. Is the first response that I'd say many leaders would have in that situation is they will ask, "Well, have you done anything?" And to the lead, and to me, they have their judge of Israel hat on, like, well, let's make sure you haven't done anything, that you know you haven't acted out or anything, when in reality, that person is not there to confess, is not there to talk about sinning. They're there to be understood and heard. And so rather than putting on that hat, oftentimes they need to put on the other hat and say, well, wow, what's that like? What's your week been like? Wow, I bet that's difficult. I mean, what else can you tell me about that, right? And just having somebody that where they're being heard and validating them is a big thing, right? So in that conundrum that your friend was in, where the leader said you got to do something about that, okay, I can put my Judge of Israel hat on and go upset some peoples, and then what do we got? You know, then what, now that guy hates me, and then what? Then how does that help anything, right? And so I empathize with that state presidency member who obviously wants order. And I remember being in the state presidency, leaning over to a member of a bishop and saying, hey, just so you know, the tablecloth on the sacrament is not supposed to be transparent. Yours is. Anyway, just for your information, you probably didn't know that. Anyways, he's like, oh, I didn't know that. It's in the handbook. You should not have a transparent tablecloth over the sacrament, right? Now, if I would have leaned over and said, hey, man, this is ridiculous. I mean, what is this? You don't care about the Savior? You don't like the sacrament, right? So it's all in our approach. If we don't remove that judge in Israel hat at times and put on the empathizing hat and just say, like, I'm here to help. I'm here to understand. I'm here to help you be a better leader, a better member, a better person. And if I'm not in that role, if I'm always the judge in Israel, it leads to bad leadership because it's bad leadership.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Kurt Frankum. In our next conversation, we'll talk about whether he thinks some bishops' interviews are inappropriate and what should be done about them.
To me, I would much rather create resources and information for parents to know how to teach their youth. I want my daughter walking into a bishop's office knowing that if any adult does this, this, or this, like, you need to tell me and you need to know this is a safe place for me, right? Because there will always be violators out there. There will always be people with pedophilia intentions. We can't get rid of that. So we can educate the youth to better approach that and then do our due diligence to make sure that whoever we put in that role as bishop is not going to do that. And we're just not going to completely eradicate that problem by suddenly putting in another counselor or the Relief Society president in there. He'll find a different way.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.